In this episode of Movie Wallahs, we're going to review the movies The Evil Dead, Trance, and The Company You Keep. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazji as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
That's a very reserved hello there.
Happy Tuesday.
It is Happy Tuesday.
Not even hump day.
I know.
I know.
It's been a long week already.
I know. I'm ready to work one more day and call it a week.
It really feels long already.
So, Cannes is coming up.
Yes.
Have you heard any buzz, Yazdi?
No, I think they've started to announce the slate of films. They have the jury already. And I think the official list of the opening night and closing night movies is going to be released any day now.
Cool. We'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, and I think I saw something on Yahoo Movies that said, you know, the top buzzed films that people are excited to see at Cannes. And actually, the interesting thing is none of them are any that any of us, I think, have heard of. They're a completely new batch of films from anything that's come out already from South by Southwest.
But that's always the case, isn't it?
Yeah, I think all the buzz will start now. And we're into May, coming into May, so
I was surprised to learn that Cannes was industry only. Did you know that?
Like only when
if you want to buy a ticket and go to Cannes as a film fan, it's not a film festival that you can attend.
Oh, I didn't know. I knew it was notoriously difficult to get in, but I didn't realize it was impossible.
Yeah.
Glenn, who sits on San Diego Film Critics, he was just telling me about that. And I was really thrown by that because as a movie fan, I love to talk about film festivals that people can go and enjoy. But Cannes is far too snooty for the general public.
It's just as well, I guess, because it's a small town and there aren't enough hotels. And I think if the whole world descended, yeah, you know, they'd have to camp out.
It would
out.
Be a nightmare, yeah.
Although I would love to attend.
I would too. We've been there when the festival wasn't on. It's a lovely place. Very small. I mean, incredibly small town.
Well, let's watch out for that and maybe at least we'll try and pick up the buzz, see what kind of movies we have to look forward to later in the year.
Yep, May 15th to May 26th.
Oh, it's coming up.
Yep.
Real quick.
All right, well, let's talk about the three movies that we can talk about. Let's kick off this episode with The Evil Dead. Yeah, that was like the bad ghost, not the Evil Dead. So, Yazdi, you want to tell us about The Evil Dead?
I can do that. In 1981, Sam Raimi directed the seminal horror film The Evil Dead, which starred Bruce Campbell. It was about what has become the quintessential horror film trope since then. Young, somewhat stupid protagonists who land up in a cabin in the woods, isolated from civilization or any other form of communication, left to fend for themselves. And while they are there, they realize that they have to defend themselves, often unsuccessfully, from the most single-minded set of actual living demons. The 1981 film holds a full-fledged cult status amongst horror film fans, and so it is somewhat surprising that anyone dared to make a remake. But here it is, 32 years later, a remake directed by Fede Alvarez, who also co-wrote along with Diablo Cody. The film covers the same ground in terms of plotting as the original film and stars Jane Levy, Shiloh Fernandez, and Lou Taylor Pucci in lead roles. I didn't see that movie. I think you guys saw that at a midnight screening at South by Southwest, and I've heard so much about it since then, so I'm eager to know what you guys think, especially considering, Joe, that you're a horror movie buff and Rashmi, that you're not.
Yes, I was going to start with that very line, Yazdi. I hate horrors. So we're standing in the line at South by Southwest for an hour, okay, because the lines are really, really long. This is going to be one of those opening night, huge fanboy filled lines go, you know, three times around this huge city block. And Joe finally admits to me that he couldn't even make it through the trailer. Okay, so
because he was so scared.
Yeah,
because I was watching the trailer one night for the remake at about, I don't know, it's close to midnight. Rashmi had gone to bed. The house was really quiet, and I thought, oh well, let me just take a quick look at this trailer. And yeah, 2/3 of the way into the trailer, I'm like, yeah, now I've got to walk upstairs on my own. I'm going to switch this off.
Okay. So at that point, I nearly pooped my pants. But that being said, I love this movie. This was an absolute highlight for me at the festival. This is one of the best horrors I have ever seen. And Yasti, I'm telling you, when I came back, I said, Yasti, you have to see this one because you hate horror as much as I do. I mean, the credits run, and literally within 15 seconds, you get your first scare complete with a dead cat within the next 15 seconds. This was incredible. I love this movie.
Poor kitty.
Yeah, Rashmi smiling here, talking about dead cats. You must have really loved this movie.
Right.
Because Rashmi can't stand anything that's
detrimental to cats. Yeah.
So, I mean, I want to clarify. I'm not a horror movie buff. I'm not like, I don't seek out horror movies, but there are a number of horror movies that fall into some of my favorite films, you know, classics, Poltergeist, the original Evil Dead, Drag Me to Hell from a couple of years ago. So I think of the three of us, I like horrors more, but I won't call myself learned in the arts of horror movie. I have a little story just to tell you about Evil Dead before I give you my opinion. This movie I watched, the original, back in the 80s, when I was far too young to watch a horror film as scary as Evil Dead. And I remember watching it as, I don't know, it was a pirate video. It was one of those videotapes that got passed around from person to person. So I remember watching it one night and being maybe 9 or 10 years old. I can't remember how old I was when it came out. And being absolutely petrified for months. It's a deep part of my psyche. There are expressions and sayings from the original Evil Dead that mess me up till today. And I watched it a couple of years ago on Netflix, and it wasn't all that scary. I thought it was all a bit silly, but it was a lot of fun, and I kind of recognized why it was a classic. So I came into this remake with a little bit of trepidation. I was given some confidence by the fact that Sam Raimi, the original director, had a hand in producing this one. So him and I think Bruce Campbell and somebody else produced this movie. And what a great job they did. Now, you know, the caveat to the way Rashmi and I experienced the movie was we did watch it at South by Southwest on opening night with a bunch of fanboys. So
1,298 of
the largest theater that they had at South by Southwest. So it was dripping with fanboy atmosphere. Everyone was rooting for this movie. You could feel it in the air. And every single beat that the movie hit was just met with joy from everyone around us. So even though it was scary, it was one of the most fun experiences that I've had in a movie theater. And I think that did certainly add a point or two to the way we perceive the movie. But it was a very competent remake. I think it hit all of the high points of the original movie. It was scary and it was fun. And even though it did all of the standard things, like you say, Yazdi, that have become classic cliches in horror movies, the don't go into the cellar type moment, it was still remarkably fun, remarkably scary. It filled you with this sense of dread, but it was kind of a fun sense of dread. And terrific movie going experience.
Yeah, I've heard it's very visceral and very relentless in terms of the brutality and in terms of the horror and the and whatever, you know, the violence and everything. And I guess it all depends on the tone, because ordinarily all of that stuff doesn't work for most people, or at least for me. But if it is to be fun, I think it has to be done the right way.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I found it really imaginative in the way that people die. And I can't believe I said that. But the way people die in the movie is really quite creative, for one. But there's just so much blood. I mean, there is so much blood. So after the film ended, there was a Q&A with the entire cast and the producers, and Bruce Campbell was there and the director. And they told this story that they obviously filmed in the middle of nowhere. I can't remember where now, but they were there for a few days and they literally had juggernauts of fake blood lined up. And at one stage, I think there were 3 juggernauts full of blood. And the director said, "I'm worried we're going to run out." That's how much blood is in this movie. I mean, it's incredible, but it's just so well put together. And the thing for me is, I mean, I wrote down a few things, and it has all the hallmarks of great horror, you know, close-ups, tight camera angles, views from behind the characters, out of focus. And I wrote down really great CG until we found out they didn't have CG. Everything is done. All the effects are done the good old-fashioned way, and they're done really well.
Yes, he's rolling his eyes here. Why'd that Where did that reaction come from?
How do you decapitate someone without CG?
They used to do it in the 70s all the time.
Oh, you mean, oh, okay, that's what you mean.
Yeah,
okay,
like good old-fashioned prosthetics.
I thought you meant by actually decapitating
people. No, that would make it...
That would be a snuff movie and those are illegal. We don't review them on Movie Wallers.
Just one thing, like I never noticed sound mixing. I never noticed that. But for some reason, it had incredible sound mixing. There were fantastic noises from behind you, from in front of you. Really, really visceral. And, you know, the only thing that was missing, I think, was taste and smell. But other than that, everything else was covered.
Yeah. I mean, I think the reason this movie works so well is it has this deliciously dark sense of fun. It knows it's ridiculous and it's playing with the, you know, don't go into the forest on your own, you know. Guess what the young pretty girl does very early on in the movie? She goes into the forest on her own, you know. There's a couple of scenes where you have quite ridiculous things that characters are doing in order to self-preserve, but they're ridiculous thing, you know. One of them involves an amputation. It's like, no, don't do that. Oh my god, what are you doing? And then it just spirals and it builds and it builds. So it just has this delicious sense of fun. And the original movie, now that I look back on it, had that same sense of fun. I think I was too young to appreciate it. You know, there is definitely a reason that horror movies have, you know, R ratings or NC-17s. You know, don't send young kids to watch this stuff, but if you're old enough to kind of appreciate it for what it is, it's done with a sense of fun. And then towards the end of the movie, I think the only way that they could recapture some of the greatness that the original has with people was to turn it up. And they turn it up and up and up and up and up and up. And so this juggernaut's full of blood. I mean, it's laughable. But it's not, it's done with this sense of fun. You can see the art behind it. You can see why the scene needs to go beyond where it would ordinarily go just to maintain the sense, you know, the movie sense of, you know, I'm going to keep building and end with a bang. So that's why for me it was so much fun.
I mean, 32 years later, you know, when Joss Whedon decides to make his big, you know, horror meta movie, I mean, It plays by the rules of Evil Dead. I mean, it's the same story in many ways. So it's certainly very, very influential. So I think the level of difficulty there is very high. I mean, I would run a mile away if somebody asked me to make a movie that has been so influential and to take that on and be successful at it. Or let me say, to take that on and not suck. I think that in itself is a good accomplishment.
And I think especially when we just saw something like Cabin in the Woods, which is almost like a serious spoof of something like Evil Dead. I mean, it has, you know, the same five characters and the same situation. This still managed to have integrity, but really scare you and do it in a way that was actually quite smart, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, I think the setup was great. They used a slightly different setup to the original movie, but there was a girl who needed to kick a drug problem. So, you know, had a bunch of friends around her, which is why they went to the cabin in the woods to get her away from everything. And there were explanations, I think, for all of her behaviors in terms of the eyes of the others. You know, she had this demonic possession thing going on, but, you know, everyone was like, she's on drugs, please don't, you know. So it had that.
Yeah, she's in withdrawal, you know.
No, she's possessed.
Okay, anything else to say on this one, Joe?
No.
So rate it.
So a terrific movie experience. It might be a little too late to go out there and watch it with crowds now. I think this movie opened a little bit before we had a chance to review it here on the show. But if you do get a chance to go see it on a Friday night, ideally with a group of friends, it's a really fun night out. And I'm not saying you need to be a horror movie fan to get the most out of it. It's just a fun, well put together movie. So I'm going to knock a point off my instinct rating, which is a 9, simply because I know that a lot of the energy that we got when watching the movie was because we were there on opening night with this huge fanboy crowd. So I know that I had more fun than perhaps I would ordinarily have, but that leaves it there with a rock solid 8 and a high recommendation from me.
Yeah, I was going to say, thank God it's not in 3D. Stay right until the end if you're a fan, because there is a treat. And this is a must see if you like the genre. And run out and see if you're a fan of the original. I'm going to actually go for the 9 out of 10, because I hate horror and I actually enjoyed this so much.
Wow. Not faint praise.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrific fun. I mean, it had mixed reviews. I think a lot of people are making direct comparisons to the original. And I think people that do that and view it as kind of an homage to its original movie, I think they are the ones who appreciate it a little more. Those people who just view it as another horror film, you know, it does have the many cliches that, you know, we've come to know so well. So if you take it off at face value and not give it credence for what, you know, where it comes from, I think it's a little more ordinary than that. But I think what a great job they did with this. And Fede Alvarez, he's never directed a feature-length movie before.
Yeah, and just did a short.
Yeah, and apparently he had Sam Raimi's full approval from the very start to make the movie. Yeah. So
it's amazing. I mean, he really understands how to assemble things. He knows how to scare you, but he knows how to create atmosphere, and I think atmosphere is everything in a horror film.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you've got, you know, rubber arms and legs being thrown around the place. You know, it's all about the sense of anticipation, about the build to what's going to happen. So great job, Fede. Look forward to seeing more of your work.
And congratulations on having a name like Fede.
Fede, yes. I know.
Yes, I think he's Argentinian. South American for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool guy there. Very cool guy. Very, very brave to take this on, and great job. All right, let's move on to our second movie of the week, which is The Company You Keep. Yazdi, you've got the intro for this one too.
I do.
You're working hard tonight.
I am. I'm working my butt off. The Company You Keep is the ninth film directed by Robert Redford, and it is based on the novel by Neil Gordon with the screenplay penned by Lem Dobbs. It tells the story of a group of young political activists who in the 60s were actively engaged with all manner of protests. However, one such act of protest that left many people dead results in the group disbanding and going into hiding. Cut to several decades later, and one of them releases her identity for no apparent reason. This in turn reinitiates a search for the remaining in the group who are now still being sought after by the law. Chief amongst them is Nick Sloan, played by Robert Redford, who has to go on the lam as a young journalist, played by Shia LaBeouf, starts to close in on him. The film is a supporting cast that includes Julie Christie, Susan Sarandon, Anna Kendrick, Britt Marling, hold on, I'm not done yet, Brendan Gleeson, Richard Jenkins, Nick Nolte, Chris Cooper, Stanley Tucci, Terrence Howard, and Sam Elliott. We all saw this movie together, and I'm somewhat anxious to know what you guys thought about it, because I certainly have an opinion.
You know, this was an okay film. I mean, I can't describe it as anything other than okay. It feels like the kind of film that we watched a lot back in maybe the 80s and 90s. It has that kind of, just a very standard structure to it. None of it surprised me. I enjoyed the performances. I enjoyed the way that the plot went. I'm struggling here because I didn't write down any notes after I left the movie. And it's one of those movies that has evaporated. It didn't have any real high points or low points for me. So it was a good, competent piece of work. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I just thought it was a very easy film to watch.
I mean, like the exotic Marigold Hotel last year, the great cast in this movie is endless, and they're good when they come on. I think this movie unfolds slowly and moves nicely to the finish line at a nice pace. Joe, I think you kind of covered that. I actually found it engaging and enjoyable to watch.
Hmm. Yes, he gave it the harumph.
Hmm.
There was a harumph at the beginning of that.
And a big breath.
Go for it.
So we have all had this experience, right? You're headed out someplace, all excited. Your plane pulls out of the gate and gets on the runway, and then it taxis, and it remains on the runway for 2 hours, after which the plane returns back to the gate, and you turn back with your carry-on and disembark the plane, agonizingly frustrated. This film is the equivalent of that experience. It is the cinematic equivalent of the plane that did not take off. I just wanted so much more from this movie. I just found it lukewarm and tepid and really just kind of shuffling around. It just seemed like an old person movie. It just shuffled around.
I don't know. See, I actually found that it had quite a smart narrative that's applicable today. And I thought it did it cleverly by sort of taking events that supposedly happened 30, 40 years ago and using that as a narrative to say, you know, what is terrorism? Is terrorism good or bad? Who are the good people? Who are the bad people? And I actually found myself thinking, gosh, you know, when you understand a person's passion or what they stand for, it can often make you change your mind about mm-hmm. the cause they fight for. And I found that quite interesting. I thought that was a pretty novel idea.
Yeah, and in some ways it reminded me of that movie we saw a couple of years ago, The Debt. The Debt,
which is a far superior film.
Correct, but it was that same idea that you had these people who had moved on in their lives and they had these events that occurred in their youth. And so it was a slightly differently structured version of that, but I agree with you, Yazdi. The Debt was probably one of my favorite films, I think, of 2010 or 2011, whenever we saw it. This was, like you say, you know, just ordinary. And I like the idea behind it, but I think the execution was lackluster.
Yeah, I mean, it tries to be a thriller, but then it also wants to be very calm and almost intellectual and very considered while it's being the thriller. And I thought it was neither here nor there. It had no thrills. And that's okay, you know. It's okay if you have a thriller which doesn't have thrills, but I kind of wanted something ramped up. It all seemed very...
It was very paced.
It was very, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't speed up, slow down. But I think nonetheless, it kept tension for me. I mean, I think one of the things I think may be off-putting to some people is that most scenes in the movie, whilst the main protagonist appears in them, every scene seemed to introduce a new character that were these great actors... And they kept coming on. We'd spend a little bit of time with them and then we'd never see them again. And I found that interesting and frustrating because I wanted to know more about them. But I just kept thinking, oh, who's going to come on the screen next? Like, which great actor and actress are we going to see? Because there were so many and you just wanted to be with them more.
I mean, you know, Redford is a screen icon, and I guess when he directs a movie and he calls, people show up.
Oh, but, gosh, yeah, but, you know, drop everything I'm doing.
Yeah, but it's exactly that. It was an endless parade of these very accomplished actors. And, you know, I mean, I think the world of Richard Jenkins. I think the world of Chris Cooper. I think the world of Stanley Tucci. And, you know, Brendan Gleeson is one of the great, you know, actors of our times. And they're all reduced to these little few-minute parts, and they just seem wasted. I mean, Anna Kendrick, what is she doing in this movie? I mean, she's so good, and she's in a bit part, you know? So it seemed like a wasted opportunity. I mean, yeah. Julie Christie, she was in Dr. Zhivago, for crying out loud, yeah. And, you know, she has a decent-sized role, but again, she's I don't know if she's allowed to do much or if her character's been written too monotonous. I don't know. It just seemed wasted. And the other thing I wanted to comment on, since you brought it up, Rashmi, is, you know, Robert Redford seems to suffer from this Woody Allen syndrome, which is, you know, he cannot resist the urge to place himself in films he directs. And I thought Robert Redford was really wrong for this role. I mean, you know, he plays a guy who has a 9-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was 75 years old. He's too old to be his grandfather, even. So he should have really resisted the urge to.
Yeah. And he runs like a woman, which really irritated me. The man jogs like a woman. In fact, I thought, who's that woman? And then it was him.
Yeah. Get a body double for your action scenes, Robert, because... yeah, Rashmi's got a point. It made me giggle, actually, when he was doing the running.
Yeah.
And I what a horrible thing for us to criticize here, right?
I know.
But it was jarring. And I'm, you know, obviously he's surrounded by, you know, enough sycophants that nobody will say, you know, hey, what about that scene where you're running? You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, this is one of the first movies I've seen that Shia LaBeouf wasn't unbearable to watch. Again, my only criticism is that he really was the exposition of the movie for the most part. And it's okay. I didn't find it dull or off-putting.
I liked him in this.
Yeah, I liked him too. That's what I was saying. I actually enjoyed his performance in it. But it was just too much exposition. He was really the narrative telling us what's going on.
Yeah, it was a little smarmy. And I don't know if the character was meant to be. But yeah, he didn't annoy me as much as he usually does.
Should we wrap this one up?
Sure.
Yeah, I think we've all run out of things to say.
Yeah, it's gone from my brain, which I think speaks to how I perceived the movie. But I didn't have a horrible time. I didn't think, you know, I wasn't trying to escape the movie theater. I just found myself being adequately entertained. It's definitely a kind of easy movie, I would say. If it's on HBO on a Sunday afternoon and you've watched everything in your Netflix queue and this happens to be on, take the time to watch it. Why not? 6 out of 10.
I mean, you stole the words from my notes when you mentioned the movie The Debt earlier, and I would recommend people really, it's streaming live on Netflix right now, and it's a movie which speaks far better to, you know, how you pay for the sins of what you might have done when you were young and impassioned. And it features Helen Mirren and a totally underappreciated performance from Jessica Chastain. And I think that movie is a much better version of that. So I would recommend people watch that. And I know that I usually complain about films that are bombastic and overblown, but then this film is the other extreme. It's just, you know, it's just limp and tepid and anemic. And I really wanted it to take off, and it did not. So it was barely watchable for me. I give it 4 out of 10.
Wow. Gosh, I think Yazdi became opinionated while on this show. I mean, I actually enjoyed the movie more than anything. I took this to be an interesting movie about what we believe to be right and wrong and how our ideas evolve and change as we grow older. I thought this was a good, solid film. I mean, I wouldn't say rush out and see it, but if you're looking for something that's not, you know, going to be Superman or Iron Man or anything with a man in it, then I think this is going to be even a man who runs like a woman, then this is a good movie. I enjoyed it. I'll give it, I think, 6 out of 10 as well.
4, 6, and 6.
Yeah. Not so far apart.
It's not often that Yazdi gives things less than 5.
Because I expect so much from Robert Redford. I mean, he's been in the business forever. He started Sundance. I mean, I expect that if he stands behind a movie, that he has something to prove or some statement to make. And this movie just seems so pointless.
And I can see why everyone was drawn to the plot, because I think a script... In terms of script, I think it was probably a very interesting read. Mm-hmm. The movie just lost some energy somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
And it all felt a little predictable, which I don't think the story was. But it ended up feeling very mundane. So
I thought the predictability for me probably kicked in about 20 minutes from the end.
That's a bad time for predictability to kick in.
Right, but it wasn't through the whole movie. I mean,
I know what you mean, but...
It wasn't predictable. It's just like by the last 20 minutes, you're like, oh, that's what's going to... Oh, I get it. Well, that's smart.
It's like getting the punchline before you hear it.
That's not a bad end to a movie.
I didn't buy the very last scene, and I can't talk about it because it's a spoiler, but I didn't buy it at all.
All right, well, let's do a spoiler alert at the end of the podcast, if we remember, because I want to hear that. Let's move on to our final movie of the week, which is Trance. Trance is the latest movie by one of our favourite directors, Danny Boyle. I've been a huge fan of his since Trainspotting, I guess. Shallow Grave, some of his earlier work. It's just, you know, he went on to win tons of stuff for
Slumdog,
and he did 127 Hours. So Danny Boyle needs no introduction here. We love Danny Boyle. And the basic story of Trance is about a character called Simon, who is a fine art auctioneer, and he teams up with a criminal gang to steal a painting worth millions of dollars. But during the robbery, he suffers a blow to the head, and when he wakes up, he discovers he has no memory of where he hid the painting. When physical threats and torture fail to produce answers, the gang's leader, Frank, played by Vincent Cassell, hires hypnotist Elizabeth Lamb to delve into the darkest recesses of Simon's psyche. As Elizabeth begins to unravel Simon's broken subconscious, the lines between truth, suggestion, and deceit begin to blur. So, pretty interesting premise. Not the movie I was expecting to see, but, and Yazdi, unfortunately, you weren't able to see this one yet. Oh,
I wasn't.
So frustrating, because I really would love to hear
your opinion on it, actually.
Think of this one, but anyway.
I mean, even when I don't necessarily love his movies, I love the way he makes movies. So I'm sure I'll enjoy it just for his cinematic treatment of the material. And it looks really trippy with all what little I've seen in previews and so forth. So I'm sure I'll at least appreciate that part. But,
So again, you know, not to harp on about South by Southwest, but Joe and I were fortunate enough to do an audience with Danny Boyle, and we got to see about 7 minutes of the movie. And ever since then, I have been super, super excited. I mean, I can't tell you how excited I've been to watch this movie, not only because we'd seen a bit of the movie, but because I'm a huge Danny Boyle fan. So although this is not an Oscar nomination by any standard, this is an exciting movie to watch that moves at a great pace and keeps you guessing the entire way.
I'm blown away by the fact that you didn't mention Inception in your first line.
Because, it's in my last one.
Because as soon as the movie kind of revealed what it was actually, as opposed to what the previews lead you to think it's going to be, Inception springs to mind. And for me, then it evaporated because I have very strong opinions about Inception. But it's got a very similar, you know, what's real, what's not real, what's in the hypnotic world and what's the character really believing versus what's reality. So it has all of these reality type questions in it. But this for me was just another great Danny Boyle effort. Oh. And it really feels like his work, right? All the directors have their kind of signature feel and you feel his presence behind the camera. I think it gets a little ambitious with its plot twist, and I think the movie gets very messy, slightly over-contorted. So I was struggling to kind of follow it towards the end. And, you know, for me, the biggest criticism I have of the movie is that it felt a little underwritten. I'm more for restraint versus exposition, but I think we need a little more exposition just so that we can follow what's going on. So it was very confusing, but it's such a fun Danny Boyle experience. I mean, I would watch Danny Boyle direct somebody boiling an egg and it would be fun, right?
It would.
That's the thing with his work. Yeah. He jumps around. He has enormous energy and that's just the feel that this movie has.
The movie's been getting really mixed reviews. There are some people who are really turned off by it, by the plot or what have you. So I don't know if it helps that we have a built-in admiration for the director and his style of work, and that helps.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
I mean, biased. I'm unable to objectively review a Danny Boyle movie.
Yeah, I mean, clearly this is not as accomplished as something like Slumdog Millionaire or 127 Hours or even Trainspotting. It's just not that accomplished. But it's frenetic and it's hyper-stylish. It has holes in it, but none that you can't forgive because the experience as a whole is very good. And Joe, to your point, this reminded me most of Total Recall mixed with Inception. It's trippy. Yazdi, as you said, you're absolutely right. It's trippy, but it works.
Mm.
And I think, you know, a lot of it works because of the casting. I love Vincent Cassel. I mean, he is just...
He's a little typecast.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. He's totally typecast, but he does it so well and he's so enjoyable to watch.
James McAvoy did a great
James
job.
Yeah, James McAvoy
here as well.
Did a great job. Yeah, and Rosario Dawson, very good.
I mean, I think the criticism of the movie comes from this really trippy midsection. You know, trippy was a word you used, Rashmi, and also you in the Yazdi in the introduction. And it goes into this really odd meandering section where nothing really seems to make sense. You're not given the information you need to follow it along. And I'll have to admit, this is a first for me in a Danny Boyle movie. But about two-thirds of the way through, I looked at my watch.
Mm.
I never do that in a Danny Boyle movie, but I did think, okay, I'm done with this part of the movie. Let's bring it to its conclusion because I don't know what's going on. Like, you know, it's fun to watch, but it's gone on enough. So that to me, I think, may be where some of the criticisms comes from.
So it doesn't fizzle out, though. I think some of the reviews seem to indicate that it kind of goes nowhere.
It gets confusing, and that's the thing. It starts to wrap you up in layer upon layer of just, you don't really know what's going on, and nobody's telling you what's going on. So that's the issue I think people have with it. And if you find that kind of stuff boring, if you're not a fan of Boyle's work behind the camera, if you're not a fan of, you know, some pretty decent music that, you know, the score here was, you know, Rick Smith, who collaborated with Danny Boyle on a bunch of movies, Trainspotting, and he was at South by Southwest as well. I think he kind of carries a lot of the energy of the movie along with this great soundtrack. But if you're not a fan of that aesthetic, then this is going to be a little boring.
I mean, this is certainly the most stylish film I've seen him do. I mean, when you think about something like Oceans, they're very stylish movies. And I kind of, not that this is anything like Oceans, but it's got a real sense of style. And to take somewhere as gritty as London, you know, main London and areas of London that you don't typically get to see and make them look hyper stylish, that's quite smart, I think.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it from that perspective, just to see our home. I'm ready to wrap this one up, though.
Yeah, sure.
scores. Okay, so for me, if you like solving puzzles, you will really enjoy this movie. It's fast-paced and original in the way it tells its story. And come on, it's Danny Boyle. I'm going to give this one a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, this one's going to get a 7 from me as well. I think the movie opened really well. It was so reminiscent of the Choose Life sequence in Trainspotting, where the character is introduced in narrative fashion. He has this voiceover thing and he explains what his world is about. And so, you know, it has that, you know, the moment you watch the movie, you get really, you know, buzzed. And if you're a Boyle fan, that stays with you through the rest of the movie. So you forgive it. It's failings. And so for me, you know, it's a great stuff for Boyle fans. I think really hard to recommend for people who aren't diehard Danny Boyle fans. So 7 is a fair score.
Very good.
Have we convinced you to watch it?
No, there was no convincing needed. I always wanted to watch
it. Yeah.
And I missed the screening.
Yeah.
To my great detriment.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do go out and see this one. And I think it's worth seeing in the big screen just because.
Yeah, I agree.
It has that soundtrack and that energy. Yeah, I agree. So let's wrap up our episode for today. Let us know what you think of these movies. Mail at moviewallers.com, twitter.com/moviewallers, facebook.com/moviewallers as well. Looking forward to our next episode where we're going to review Oblivion,
Ooh.
Disconnect,
Ooh.
And Arthur Newman.
Ooh.
Until next time, it's too many movies. Too little time.
Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well. All right, well, let's do a spoiler alert at the end of the podcast, if we remember, because I want to hear that.
It's about him, you know, walking away with his daughter. He's finally reunited with his little daughter, and he hugs her, and they walk away holding hands into the street. I did not believe he was her father ever, and it just seemed like something tacked on to make you emotionally feel something that you're not going to feel. So it was just very disappointing. He's so accomplished. He directed Ordinary People and River Runs Through, and all these movies.
That was a long time ago, Yassi. He's an older man now.
Look at Clint Eastwood. He's making his best movies right now.
Nonsense.
What do you mean nonsense?
Codswallop.
I agree with Joe. I'm not a Clint fan.
Not a Clint fan here either.
Yeah.